that drive from Baton Rouge to Dallas, and just to get out of Louisiana, it felt like it took a day. I'm like, well, I'm never doing that shit again. So when to hear you say 6.5 hours, I was like, yeah, that sounds about right.
It's like a drive to LA, basically.
Fuck that. Yeah, hey, it's like a drive to LA, but it's not like a drive to LA.
Because you definitely ain't going to LA. That's
no,
the damn
no, not in the slightest.
What's your duties this weekend?
I got nothing. Got the week off, so it's fucking.
Oh, that's right, because there's no game. They got to buy.
Yeah, so it's fucking fantastic.
What a great life.
You know, it's not bad, Marcus. I'm not gonna lie.
It's interesting that it could be kind of a slog to cover the NFL as the season winds down. I think, and it's weird because, I think the difference between that and basketball and baseball is, you know, you got something every night in both of those. Mm-hmm. So you're not sitting there talking about the same shit for 7 days.
100%. 100%.
After a while, you exhaust yourself and you start coming up with fake shit to talk about.
100. Dude, it's just, you know, and it's been this way, I mean, ever since I've been covering the league. You know, that goes back to, just talking from my sideline days, that goes all the way back to 99 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Is that you get to after Thanksgiving and you're just like, fuck. And
yeah,
the worse the team is, the worse it gets. But even on a good team, and I got to tell you, just, you know, honestly, the fucking last game of the season against the Rams, we were all like, how do we talk about this game? Because it was, I mean, there was literally nothing to talk about.
Yeah, it's nothing. It's back, buddy. Sorry, the dog is in the car, dude. We got the dogs trying to jump in the front seat.
As long as it's not driving, you're good.
No, dog's not driving. Although Toa does like to let the dog drive with her, which is fucking strange. And I'm like, dude, you shouldn't be having a dog in your lap. It's it's a ticket, and you could get us killed.
Oh, is it really a ticket?
Oh yeah.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah. It's a violation. It's a straight up violation.
Well, that doesn't stop anybody out in California from doing it because they like to drive
California
their dogs
thing.
In the car. Oh, yeah. It's a California thing to take your dog any and everywhere, including restaurants and grocery stores.
Bro.
And I know like it.
I'm with you. When I see people with their dogs up in the restaurants and all, I'm like,
no.
What are we doing?
No, no.
What are we doing?
No.
I actually had to talk to the owner of the place that I'm working for, because he was having a dog come sit at the bar.
Nah.
Like, what are you doing?
Nah.
What?
Nah.
Even here, that's a violation.
No.
Even here, it's a violation.
Dogs and babies, they both have their place, okay?
Yes. Amen. Amen.
And on that note, as y'all can tell, we have already started this edition of Quality Hang. I am Rod Brooks. And as always, I'm joined on this podcasting adventure by my partner in crime, the king of New Orleans. He is Marcus Osborne. What's up, man?
It's all good, Daddy-O. There's so much shit going on.
Boy!
As we were setting up to record, I literally saw the news about Belichick.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, this is not that shocking, is it? Is it?
No, it's not because
it'd been more of a surprise if he was coming back, to be honest.
I would 100%. And I think the bigger surprise will be if he stays retired or if he goes to another team. As we record this episode of Quality Hang on Thursday, February 11th, there have been over these not last couple of days, really the last, 18 to 20 hours, there have been some seismic shifts in the world of college and professional football coaching. It started yesterday, I guess afternoon, Pacific time, the news about Pete Carroll stepping down, being moved to an executive position within the Seahawks franchise. But in essence, Pete Carroll, no longer the head coach of the Seattle Seahawks. Pete Carroll, successful with the Seahawks, but he was most notably known as the oldest head coach in the NFL.
Yeah.
Going on 73 years old. And to do this in linear order, not a surprise that Pete Carroll is not coming back. The Seahawks are not as formidable as they had been, and you could kind of sense that it was time for a change. Not that Pete Carroll was truly on the outs, but I think it's fair to say, Marcus, as outside observers, you could see that Seattle was starting to trend in a different direction as far as their coach was concerned. I think that's fair.
Yeah, it is. I was actually surprised that Pete was let go. I don't know if it was let go or if he decided to go in a different direction himself. And I'm only surprised because I thought that he would stick on for at least another year to shepherd in whatever the new sort of the players, the new team, because this team has to be blown up. And I thought he'd at least stick around for that minimal rebuild. But, you know, again, you're that old. You've been in the game this long. It's not really a shock that you're gone.
Well, you know, a couple of things. Rarely ever do coaches like to groom their successors. With Pete Carroll, head coach in the NFL, that tells you that he didn't have any plans, in my estimation, on stepping aside. If he did,
so you think he was fired? You think he was let go?
I think he was gently placed from one part of the shelf to another part of the shelf, maybe a little bit farther back on the shelf. I think 100% the Seahawks knew he wasn't going to step down. They didn't want to have to go through the public nightmare of firing him, so it was easier to just gently suggest, "Hey, Pete, we're going to do this. How do you want us to do this?" You dig what I'm saying?
Hey, Pete, ain't you tired of doing this?
Because we're kind of tired of having you do it.
I know you got to be tired of doing this, right? You really don't want to go another year this year, do you? That's funny. Yeah. I bet it all makes complete total sense. The Pete Carroll dismissal, the Belichick dismissal. Again, I don't know if he was fired or if he quit, but I have a feeling it was the same sort of situation.
So the one in the middle, so Pete Carroll starts this, Bill Belichick ends this, and we'll get deeper into Belichick in a second. But the one in the middle, for me, was the shocker.
Vrabel?
Yesterday afternoon, Nick Saban, not announces, but Nick Saban. That's what I'm saying. That's how crazy these last 20 hours have been. Is that right there in the middle, the most successful of the three coaches, and I get that, you know, Nick Saban is a college coach, but if we're just talking championships, the most successful of the three coaches in Carroll, Belichick, and Saban, Nick Saban, it's reported, and it is true, he hasn't had the press conference yet, Nick Saban stepping down as the head coach at the University of Alabama. To me, that's the shocker. We could see the Belichick in coming. And it started with Tom Brady going from New England to Tampa and then retiring. The Pete Carroll thing, like I said, I felt like I could see that coming. The Nick Saban one, absolutely fucking not. Did I see this coming?
Nope, no way.
No way.
Not a chance.
No way.
That's like a hurricane out of nowhere, that one. I don't know why. I don't know if he got tired of it. Again, I don't know if he's just tired of it. I don't know if they said you got to go. I don't know if there's maybe some stuff, some stories that are going to come out about Nick Saban. And he's like, you know what? I need to get out of here before they really blow this story up. Because that's my conspiracy theory side. But it could be any of those things.
Well, you know, I think I'm a big Occam's Razor guy. And I'm a big college football fan. And I've watched the sport intensely as I have since I was a kid, and me being an LSU guy, I'm really paying attention to what's going on in the SEC at my own school and what's going on at my school's biggest rival, which is Alabama. Yeah. And I think, and you know, LSU's relationship with Nick Saban is unlike any other school's or any other football team's relationship with Nick Saban in the country because Nick Saban went to LSU, resurrected LSU, made him a national power, and then with that stop in Miami in between, goes to Alabama, our biggest rival, and nicks Alabama, the greatest college football program of all time. And that's including back when Alabama had Bear Bryant. But the,
that's
the
including
thing
with, Notre Dame.
That's better than all of them. Fuck them all.
Yeah, yeah. There we go.
You know, and I got no love for Alabama, but come on, man. Let's just call it what it is. The, Nick Saban's iteration of Alabama football was better than anybody else's college football program in over 150 year history of college football. But a couple of things.
True.
There's no way anybody at the University of Alabama told Nick Saban is shape up or ship out. No fucking way. Absolutely. Right. As much as I respect Nick Saban. But as much as I hate him and his association with the University of Alabama, I do think that he has done things the right way, whatever you decide to call the right way in college football. I think what drove Nick Saban out is watching Alabama this year, and I saw this from the jump, especially when they got pushed around by Texas in Tuscaloosa, that was not a Nick Saban team. Forget about the quarterback position. That team, that Alabama team, was not as good up front, especially on the offensive line, and they were not as strong as they had been for years defensively. Then you get to the skill position players that weren't as good as before. This was not a typical Nick Saban team, and if you watch college football and you know how he gets down, you can see that from the beginning. But I think what really did it, and this, we saw this similarly in college basketball with Mike Krzyzewski when he left Duke. The college landscape has changed and is changing as we speak. Coaches are no longer in charge. Programs are no longer in charge. NIL is in charge. Money is in charge. Player empowerment, being able to go from one team to another, just like the coaches have been forever, now the players can do that. And in college football, you're going from a 4-team playoff to a 12-team playoff, and the SEC has expanded to include Texas and Oklahoma. I think Nick Saban looked around at his success at 72 years old, saw the changing landscape of college football, which, again, is changing as we speak. I think he looked around and went, "Nah, I'm good." I think it is that simple.
Yeah, I mean, I that wouldn't shock me at all. I mean, that probably is a bit of his thinking because, I mean, it does make it tougher. Like, the adding these teams does make it tougher for Alabama to do what they do every single year.
It makes them tougher for them to dominate in the way that they have dominated. They'd still be very, very good, but as far as dominating, nah.
Exactly, because now you've got teams that are that are in your league and you're playing them every single week. I don't envy the person who takes over that Alabama job at all, because it's going to, A, you're trying to take over for a guy who is a living legend, and B, you have to live with the fact that, oh, now everybody can play in the same field as us.
Yep.
And the pressure is going to be high, unnecessarily high, for the next person who comes in.
And
it won't be fair at all.
Let me say to the next person who is going to be the University of Alabama, fuck you. I don't care. I don't care that you're replacing a living, breathing statue in Nick Saban. I don't care that you are taking on the toughest job in all of college football. You're being handsomely compensated for it. I don't care that it has been proven time and time again that following a legend is a death sentence. You took the job. Therefore, I dislike you intensely, immediately. So, fuck you. And the horse you rode into Tuscaloosa on.
That sounds painful. I'll tell you what. I actually enjoy this stuff. Because I like when things change. And I like when there's a big blow up and the landscape of the entire sport has changed at this point. And now, we get to usher in a brand new era of whomever is going to be the new big boy. I'll tell you what. If you don't think this is going to make it even easier for Jim Harbaugh to stay in Michigan, you're insane. Because now he's the big boy. He's the big boy now. Alabama has that name, but Michigan, obviously no slouch. And they just won this national championship. Harbaugh's not going anywhere. He is now he's going to be the most highly compensated public employee of the state of Michigan. He's going to make so much money, and he's not going. He's going to have all the power, all the money. No one's going to be able to tell him anything. Why would he pass that up to come back to the NFL where he had the boss?
Props to Michigan for once again being a national power. They just won the national championship, won it decisively over Washington, had a very good season, beat the teams they were supposed to beat, and beat them handily. You know, thinking of Penn State and Ohio State, had that tussle with Alabama in the Rose Bowl, but they were in charge of that game at times, and again beat Washington handily in the national championship game. I'll say this about Michigan, though, in terms of them being the big boy in college football. You just got into the rarefied air. Georgia's been there for a while. And to me, Georgia, even though Michigan is the reigning national champion, Georgia now is the standard bearer as far as programs in college football. When Michigan wins another title here in the not too distant future, or if Michigan beats Georgia, especially to win that title, now maybe we're talking about things changing. But Georgia won back-to-back titles and only lost to Alabama in a fairly close game in the SEC championship game. I'm going to have to see another year of Georgia not playing for a national championship before I start to think that things are shifting in terms of Georgia slipping and a new team, possibly Michigan, taking over their throne.
Yeah, I'm with you on all that. I want to clarify, Michigan is the top dog right now. Georgia should be seen as maybe the heir apparent to Alabama, but
100%.
It's everybody's space now. Even with Georgia winning the last couple, everybody still always said, yeah, but it's still Alabama's world.
People said that. I think they said that, though, reflexively, and I think they said that if they didn't really pay attention to college football. But if you paid attention to college football, you see that Georgia, for the last, you know, especially for the last 5 years, Georgia has been them dudes. And they surpassed Alabama in the SEC. I think, though, that when it comes to the landscape of college football, the 12-team playoff is going to give a lot of teams a lot of shots at getting to that national championship game and winning a title. And the portal, you know, like I'm always going to enjoy my rival's downfall. You know what's happening at Alabama right now? Cats are decommitting from their commitments to go to Alabama out of high school, and the portal is now open for Alabama players, and we're talking studs, we're talking four stars, we're talking five stars, we're talking ones, we're talking dudes. The portal is open, and teams around the country are trying to get those great Alabama players to leave because of the uncertainty to come and play for them. Teams are raiding right now the University of Alabama for their players. The portal The portal and the 12-team playoff changing right now college football, and it's going to be harder for teams like Georgia or like Michigan to grab that top spot and hang on to it as long as Georgia has currently, and as long as Alabama did when Nick Saban was really cooking in the era of the BCS and then the 14 college football playoff.
Yeah, I have no problem with any of that. That's going to make this sport so much more interesting
and so much more vital. I completely agree.
I can't tell you, and you and I had this conversation. You probably agree with me. It's 12 is probably too many teams.
I think it should have been 8. Yes. Yeah. They were eventually going to have to go to 12, and they're probably going to end up going to 16. I don't know when that's going to happen, but I think it's going to eventually end up being 16 when all is said and done, because we got more realignment. We have more seismic shifts in college football coming when it comes to conferences no longer being around or conferences no longer being a part of college football as we know it.
I'm sure you give some thought. Who would be a great successor to Nick Saban? I saw the name Marcus Freeman thrown out there. I'm like, Nah, that would never happen.
Man, a black man at the head coach of University of Alabama? Nah.
I don't want to be that dude, but.
Hey, dog, you can't even get a black man to coach the college football really anywhere. Marcus Freeman and Deion are really, that's it. Basically.
That's kind of it, ain't it?
And there's 120 teams in Division I college football, and you only have a literal handful of black coaches.
It's worse than in the NFL, dude. We're just saying something.
Yeah,
like comparatively speaking, the NFL is light years ahead of college football. Light fucking years.
Which ain't saying much. I couldn't even begin to tell you, who would be a good fit. I don't know. You know, the names get thrown out there. Dabo Swinney. They would be taking a step back if they got Dabo out of Clemson.
For real.
Even though Dabo has had success.
Dude, what's Lane Kiffin in up there? The king of failing forward.
But, well, here's the thing about Lane Kiffin. That fucker can coach, man. That fucker can.
Can he though?
Yeah, man. He,
offense.
No, dog. He
offense.
Can, but that's shit. That's half the battle. Yeah, that's really the battle. I'm telling you, dog.
I don't have faith in him. I don't have faith in him.
Well, those are two different things. You cannot have faith in a guy. You could also acknowledge that he could coach. Everything, not having faith in him, absolutely. I don't trust Lane Kiffin as far as I can throw him. But this dude has gone to Ole Miss, and Ole Miss has not won the conference. They have not won the SEC since the late 60s. They had not won 10 games ever. Maybe once.
I can't debate that. That's true.
And he has come in, and Ole Miss is a good, good team. That fucking dude can coach. I guess
I'll give him that.
If I'm at the University of Alabama, I wouldn't trust him.
That's kind of my thing with
character.
Him.
Yeah,
I guess that's my thing. I would want him to be my lead guy because I think most of these guys know the X's and O's stuff. Coaching is so much more than just the X's and O's, and about any of these like management positions. It's all anybody can give you the administrative shit, the X's and O's stuff, but it's that people management stuff that always is some of these guys' downfall. Which is why I've had a problem with Harbaugh. He can coach, but he can't get along with people, and he always burns himself out.
Yeah, so let's mentioning Harbaugh, and you mentioned the NFL and how they get down with their coaches. So now we turn this thing to Bill Belichick. And again, as we record this episode of Quality Hang, Bill Belichick just had his press conference announcing that he is no longer the head coach of the New England Patriots. Nowhere in the press conference, nowhere in the statement, because he did not take questions, strangely enough.
I was going to say, of course he did.
Nowhere in his statement did he say that he was retiring from coaching. Maybe he is, maybe he's not. Bill Belichick, his normal enigmatic self. I personally don't think he's done. And I think that is another job that opens up where Jim Harbaugh's agent can go back to the University of Michigan and go, listen, Raiders got an opening, even though I think Antonio Pierce deserves that job. Chargers, they got an opening. The Commanders, they have an opening. And now the Patriots, they have an opening. The Tennessee Titans, even though I don't think he would go there. The Tennessee Titans, they have an opening.
Side note, it's crazy. Bob Myers is helping lead that search with the Commanders.
Right? Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, listen, man, Bob Myers is a smart dude and respected. Yep. And I'm as shocking as it was to hear that news that he's going to be a part of the Commanders executive staff. It doesn't surprise me knowing, you know, Bob Myers in the little bit that I do know him. But it's funny how in Seattle, this job is now open. Could Jim Harbaugh take that job? 100%. So it is all hilarious that since, you know, the last time we talked a week ago before the national
literally
championship
a week ago,
game, that this is all set up for Jim Harbaugh to basically have the pick of some of the best, not just coaching jobs, but some of the best jobs in the United States of America. Jim Harbaugh's agent could go to Michigan and go, even though I don't think this can happen,
yeah,
but Jim Harbaugh's agent could go to Michigan and go, you see that Alabama job done opened up.
See.
You know what I mean? Like, yep. Jim Harbaugh is about to come out of this smelling real, real good.
Yep. That's exactly my point. Like, this dude, it could go any better for this guy.
No. Nope.
He is going to break that bank. And I don't care what they, because he just re-signed last year, right? Or was it the year before? Did he just re-up?
It fairly recently, yeah. I forget the exact when, like, but it's been recent, yes. It,
like, either last year or the year before. I'm like, yeah, you can tear that up, bro. Tear that up. tear that up, whatever. Triple this contract. Tear it up, and I want a 10-year guaranteed deal.
I mean, you ain't lying. I mean, it's wild how, again, just in these past few hours, it's almost like when you're driving in traffic and you've just been stuck, and the next thing you know, it opens up and there's nobody in front of you, and you can go as fast as you want. Things have opened up for Jim Harbaugh in a way that I guarantee you he never imagined it. Never imagined it. And this could all be as simple as he stays at Michigan, or he could go the Pete Carroll route of having success at a school and then getting out before the NCAA finds out what dirty laundry is being piled up there. And then you go to the pros and you have success for 14, 15, 18 years. Like, it is perfect for this cat right now.
I mean, I'm sure he may have some designs on the NFL, but if I'm him, there's not a chance in hell I take an NFL job right now. I'm getting this paper from the University of Michigan, and they ain't gonna break this bank for me, brother.
But see, I'm different, man. He can, again, he can play all of these teams off each other.
And oh, for
not,
sure.
Not only get the length of contract he wants, not only get the amount of money he wants, but he can now get the power. He can go to these teams, and he can do what Kyle Shanahan did, to Kyle Shanahan's credit, and now his success. Jim Harbaugh can go to the Seattle Seahawks. Maybe not the Seahawks. He could go to the Washington Commanders, even though I don't think he'll go there. And he could go to them and say, I don't want to be the GM. I don't want to pick the players. But I do want to pick the dude who will pick the players, who will be the GM. So, in essence, he'll be the de facto GM. I guarantee you, if he went to the Raiders and he did that, Mark Davis would go, absolutely signed right here on this dotted line. So, you know, the thing with college is, like, is it easier in college? Well, again, for reasons we explained earlier with Nick Saban, because of the portal, because of NIL, because of the 12-team playoff, because of the ever-shifting landscape of college football, I don't know if I would stay there if there are jobs that, Marcus, in my estimation, in the pros, are significantly better than staying in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and being the head coach of the University of Michigan.
I think that Michigan, but only for the reason I just stated, for Jim Harbaugh, I think the Michigan job is the best job in the world, because he ain't going to have no boss.
But he won't have a boss either if he goes to the Raiders. He's not going to have a boss if he goes to Seattle. They still haven't sold that team. Paul Allen has been dead.
I would not want to go work for any of the Davis boys. He will definitely be fired working for Mark Davis.
But for a few hundred million dollars and total control of personnel decisions.
And I'm like, but can't he get the $100 million at Michigan and have complete and total control with zero oversight? You have to report to nobody.
He's got to report to the president, and he's zero oversight. You still got to deal with the NCAA, and you're dealing with 18-year-old children. Nah, man.
Yeah.
Give me the pros all day. All day. Yeah. All day.
And dealing with pro professional athletes.
I'd rather deal with them than 18-year-old players, their mothers, their fathers, and their girlfriends.
I don't know. I think I'd rather deal with the young people. Dealing with these guys, these multimillionaire players, basically going to be talking a bunch of shit. We're going to be fighting.
That's fine. but here's the thing. He ain't scared of that. Bro. Man played in the NFL. Man coached the NFL. He ain't scared of all that.
I would if I was invited, like, Jim, you got this sweetheart deal. take this money, unless you want to get out of this goddamn shitty weather. Take this money,
man,
and let's kick it.
If the LA Chargers with Justin Herbert and Derwin James playing safety, all right, if that team offered you basically any amount of money you wanted and full control of personnel decisions and who the GM is, you wouldn't go live in LA and coach the Chargers, and that team, you would stay in Ann Arbor just for you know, because you went to Michigan.
Well, I did have that stipulation. If I want to get out of that weather,
I'd go to New LA. England. I'd go to Boston. No. Fuck
that.
Man.
Fuck that.
You telling me that you think staying at Michigan is better than being the head coach of the New England Patriots? No.
I would definitely rather be the Michigan coach right now as opposed to New England coach right now, because I don't want to follow Belichick. I want to deal with none of that shit. That team is going to be trash for the next few years. I'm cool.
Okay.
I'm cool.
All right.
I'm
Seattle.
Hella cool.
Seattle.
Oh, Seattle's.
Chicago. Yeah. Even though they're going to keep their coach. But Seattle, Chicago, Vegas. Come on, man. Come on. New Orleans.
Now, I will tell you,
any pro job
that's what
is
I would
better
say.
Than any college job. I don't care what anybody says.
I don't. I promise you, there are several people who've had both would disagree with you. At least as a head coach.
Yeah.
At least as a head coach.
Then why do they always go back when given the opportunity?
Do you think Nick Saban could have gone into the NFL?
Well, he did, and he failed.
But that's my point,
it's
right?
Not
that's
for,
my point.
It's not, but he failed. The job didn't fail him. It's not for everybody. But why do they?
Right.
But why do they keep leaving college and going? Why do they?
Oh,
do
well,
it?
Everybody wants to take a shot at it.
Yeah,
so
but that's my point.
Out, but Harbaugh has already had a shot at it.
And
he's like, nah. If I was him, I'd be like, I don't want to deal with this shit no more.
I
feel like there's so many more headaches dealing with the pros and pro athletes than there are dealing with, even with the NCAA. And again, I'm qualifying all this by saying it's very much job dependent. I don't think any old NFL job is a great job. I just don't believe it.
They're 32 of the best jobs in the world. I mean,
there's 32 NFL jobs, not 32 great jobs. Don't get that twisted.
I think there are 32 of the best jobs in the world. I 100% believe that.
Not a chance. Not a fucking chance.
Come on.
I would not want to coach the fucking Jaguars. I would not.
Man.
If you give me Michigan or Jaguars, I'm giving me Michigan all day, every day. All day, every day.
Then why did Urban Meyer leave Ohio State? Which
I'll equal them
to
Michigan. Well, you found.
To go to Jacksonville.
He found out what it was.
But I'm not saying that you can't go and fail. But again,
here it is. Here's my thing.
He failed the job. The job didn't fail him.
There's a certain allure to the NFL job because it's the NFL,
yes,
right?
Yes, that's my
point.
But
my point is, just because it has that doesn't mean it is great. That's my whole thing. Because it is the NFL doesn't mean it's a great job. I don't think every job in NFL is a great job. I don't. Because you still have to work for these owners, and half these owners are shitty. They don't win. They don't give a fuck about winning. They're cheap. I wouldn't want to. Not all these jobs are good jobs, dude.
And
they're
so
NFL jobs.
And as a college coach, you want to beg kids to come play for you. You still don't know if they're going to stay there. And I think kids should be able to come and go from programs as they see fit. You got to deal with presidents, some of them who absolutely don't like football. You got to deal with conferences that are changing. You have to deal with the NCAA and their regulations. Yep. You have to deal with the parents. You have to go and beg fucking boosters for money for your program so you can compete with the.
I am not going to
beg a rich guy for his donations to the program, which in essence gives him some control over the program. When I can go into the NFL draft and draft the players that I want, man.
All those things are factors. All those things are variables, but they differ from team to team, from play to play, from player to player.
You got to deal with boosters. Even Nick Saban had to deal with boosters.
Yeah, and you know what? You still have to deal with bullshit in the NFL too.
But I'm not begging somebody for money for the health of my program. That's the point.
Yeah, but you still got to beg players to come to you. You still got to beg players to do their jobs. You have to beg players to actually give a shit about playing well. You do. You just do. Those jobs are not easy. Trying to convince these grown men, especially once they get their money, they come out here and play hard instead of them making that business decision where I'm going to sit this out and all this political bullshit you have to deal with every year. There's plenty of things that I wouldn't want to deal with.
I'm just going to tell you, man, I think your perception of how an NFL team works and how the players operate within it and how the coach-player dynamic works, it's a little bit off, my man, because nobody's begging anybody to do their jobs. It's a very professional, and some do it at a better level than others, but it's a very professional environment. When it comes to recruiting players and free agency, money has everything to do with that. You're not begging anybody to
absolutely.
Do it. Like you pay them, man, listen, man, this is what we can pay you. This is our scheme. This is how you're going to fit in it. This is going to be the playing time. It is what it is. You're not going to somebody's house and you got to entertain their mother, their father, all their cousins, their aunties, nephews, in-laws, and outlaws to get some 18-year-old kid to come and play for you.
All 100% true. But there's still personality stuff you have to deal with. There's work ethic stuff you have to deal with everybody. And you have had these interviews with coaches yourself. There are some guys who get that money and don't want to do shit.
And then they get cut.
You're stuck with paying this fool this money because this is what's about to happen with Russell Wilson. I'm not saying Russell Wilson's a bad guy. I'm not saying he's a shitty player. I'm not saying he doesn't prepare. But you fucking stuck with $85 million. Like, there's so much other shit that you have to deal with on both sides. I don't think one job is necessarily easier than the other.
Oh no, I'm not talking about easy. I think they're both difficult jobs.
But I do believe saying just in general, NFL jobs are better than college. All the NFL jobs are better than any college job. I will never agree to that because I don't think working for each and every one of these teams is a great thing.
So let me ask you this, and we'll move on because we're gonna disagree on this.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you ever see anybody going backwards? Do you ever see anybody leaving
the college?
Do you ever see anybody ever leaving the NFL, leaving an NFL job, not getting fired and then going back to college? Do you ever see anybody leaving an NFL job and going back to college?
I can't think of any.
Right.
That doesn't mean it doesn't happen. I just can't think of it.
Do you see how many people do you see leaving college to go to the NFL?
I see it all the time.
Right.
But that's not saying anything. Everybody wants to get a taste of that, but that doesn't mean those are great jobs, which is what we're talking about.
But whether or not you
leave a job all the time because you want to try something else, but that doesn't mean the job ends up being a good job. That's my point.
There are many more instances of guys leaving college, being successful in college, and leaving college and going to the pros than you will see it being in reverse. That's all I'm saying. We're going to disagree.
Sure.
I'm just pointing out that you never see it go in reverse. Ever.
But that doesn't mean the jobs are better jobs. That's my whole point.
Your
background point is all NFL jobs are better than all college jobs. I don't agree with that.
That's my opinion. We're going to disagree on that. I'm just pointing out the facts that you see guys leaving college to go to the pros. You never see it in reverse. You don't. You don't see anybody leaving an NFL job going to college.
Yeah. I don't think that really means anything. I really don't think that means anything. I really don't think that means anything. Not in terms of what I'm saying. The only thing you could draw from that is that people want to go try the NFL. That doesn't. But the actual point, the thing that you said, is the NFL jobs are better than all the college jobs.
That is my opinion. That's what I believe.
The point that they leave from college and go to the pros is not necessarily indicative that those are great jobs. That's not what that says.
But that's not what I'm saying. We're going to disagree on my opinion.
You're just making the point that these people do this and do that, right?
Exactly.
Okay, just saying. Fine.
Nobody ever goes, really. I got this nice big house.
Okay.
I'm going to move into a smaller house. Nobody does that.
they call that downsizing in the real world.
Yeah, people don't do that. So this, since the beginning of the year, since January 1st, shit has been wild. All right. We have.
Oh, my God. You're right. Oh, wait, the year just started.
January 1st, we had let a naysayer know. That happened, right? Okay, that happened. That happened 9 o'clock in the morning on New Year's Day. We had little naysayer know. Google it if you don't know what we're talking about. I don't feel like going back. We had Aaron Rodgers, Jimmy Kimmel, which I don't really feel like getting to that dumb shit.
That's ridiculous.
And we had Cat Williams.
Oh my Lord.
Going wild. And now we got Stephen A. Smith.
Ooh, wait.
Going after Jason Whitlock.
Let me tell you something, Rod. This makes me feel so good. I ain't going to lie. This made me feel so good. The Cat Williams thing, I thought it couldn't get any better than that.
Oh, neither did
this
I.
To me, this thing to this is me is way better. Because I'm so glad somebody blasted this big old punk. I hate that dude. I hate that dude with a white hot passion. And I'm not afraid to say it. And this dude, maybe I should say some of this stuff off there. But I'll talk about that later. But I'm so glad that he came out and marked this clown. I can't stand that fat bastard. And I'm glad he said it like he said it. He's a piece of shit. It was amazing.
I don't know what set Stephen A. off to the point where he would spend time on his podcast to call Jason Whitlock rightly everything but a child of God. But it happened. He did it, and yeah, I'm here for it. I detest Jason Whitlock. I think he is a vile human being. I hate that chump just like you do. And I'm not a fan of Stephen A. Smith. The screaming and the histrionics and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
you know, I don't dislike him. I don't. Hey, man, you know, he ain't never done anything to me.
He's not a fan, and that's A-okay.
Yeah, he's just not my type of hype. But you know, in this instance where you don't necessarily have to pick sides, but it's the type of fight where picking a side seems like the thing to do. Yeah, man, I'm fucking with Stephen A. Smith on this one all day.
Yeah.
Every day, because while there is this idea, and I understand it, that clapping back at Whitlock only get because he's just a giant troll, which I know is an oxymoron, but you get what I'm saying. he's a giant troll, and all he wants is the attention. All he wants is his name being said, and all he wants to do is antagonize people like Stephen A. Smith and like Katie Nolan and like so many other people that he puts in his crosshairs, like, you know, black men in general.
Black people.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you. Black people. I don't know why I felt to be exclusionary in that regard. Mm-hmm. But all he wants is for us to continue to say his name, and he doesn't care what we put in front of or after his name. I will say this, though, about Stephen A. Smith. Hey, man, you can only take so much. And I don't begrudge that brother at all for just saying, you know what, I'm about to just forego all professionalism. What he said, I called my pastor to apologize.
Yes.
I'm like, oh, hey, because that's something, and I'm not trying to make anybody upset, because that's maybe this isn't racially specific, but that's something.
That is very black.
When black people heard that, we were like,
that's very black.
Because, you know, because, like, okay, he called his bosses at ESPN.
All right, smart move.
Smart move. That's a professional thing. But when he said he called his pastor and he called his family to apologize for what he was about to say about Jason Whitlock, I'm like, man, is about to fuck this naysayer up.
That is a thing. And you are so right. Black folks will definitely reach out to the pastor
He said, Lord, forgive me for what I'm about to do. Mama, I'm sorry.
That is so, especially down south. Damn. And I was like, man, give me more. Because some of the stuff he talked about, we knew about.
Yes.
The problem is, he's been shitting on Stephen A for at least a decade.
Mm-hmm.
At least a decade. And I ain't got no problem with it. But my issue with it always was, like, I knew that this dude, when he was in NABJ, because he was, believe it or not, I knew that there was something up with this cat the first time I went out there, and really nobody was really talking to this cat.
Boy. Man. Facts.
And then
facts.
I saw it. Remember, you might not remember this. But there was a time back in the 90s. This is how far back we go with this bozo. Remember this when Andre Rison almost beat him up in the locker room?
No. What?
So, yeah, dude. He'd been talking this shit about black people since day one. And so when he was at the Kansas City Star, nobody liked him. So and so he went to Atlanta's locker room, or was it Kansas City? Anyway, Andre Rison, go look that video up. Andre Rison confronts a reporter or something like that. Andre Rison confronts Jason Whitlock. But it's like the 90s. And he got up in your boy's face. He's like, I'm going to beat your fat ass. Like, this dude is nothing but an antagonizer. And this is what I don't like about what some of the people in our business do. You say shit just to antagonize people. That's not cool. Even if you're a commentator and you're not an actual reporter, don't be saying shit just to say shit and then get mad when somebody get in your face.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you're just asking for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not blaming the victim. I'm just saying you asking for somebody to bust you in the face.
No, you're 100% right. I mean, he's a provocateur. And I don't say that with any amount of good attached to it. He is a troll, and he is a sick, sad person who, even after this takedown, and as we record this episode, I have yet to hear of any response from Whitlock. Even after this verbal takedown from Stephen A., this is not going to change him. More than likely, it's only going to embolden him.
It sure will. But you know what? You know that feeling you get when you know for a fact this is not going to do nobody no good, but it makes you feel better.
Oh yeah, 100%.
It makes me feel better.
100%.
I know it's not going to do me no good, but it makes me feel better.
100%. 100%.
I get it.
Hey, do me a favor. Hold that thought. Hold that thought, and I'm going to clap.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to clap for the edit. Hold that thought. I'll be right back.
Okay.
Go. Yeah, it works. All right. There you go.
Everything good?
Yeah, everything good. Damn dog.
Cool.
It's one of those where I guess somebody had to do it. And of course somebody would be Stephen A. So, you know, if for that, I guess he is to be commended and celebrated that he's, because a lot of people have taken the road of what he says, I'm just not going to mention him because it's not worth the aggravation and it's not worth giving him what he wants. But when you think about it, you don't have to think about it too hard. Of course, it was Stephen A. Smith that decided, nah, fuck this.
Of course. Of course.
And to that, somebody had to do it. He used to be commended.
And so what was really cool was he was naming names.
Oh, yeah.
And that, and I don't know if you ever had a chance to read that article he talked about.
Oh, yeah. The, the Deadspin article. Absolutely. I remember when it came out.
I remember that so well. I'm like, oh, wow, he went back and looked shit up.
Yeah, yeah.
What I didn't know was that he had asked some other folks to be on there. Mm-hmm. Some of the stuff I can't say.
Yeah, no, I know.
Anyway,
I'll
save some of this stuff for later.
I know.
But I'm glad he went out there and he named names. And some of the people he named have actually chimed in and gone, yep, that motherfucker is a piece of shit.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm glad. Jamel came out and said, yep, sure did.
Yeah.
My boy Gregory Lee came out and said, yep, sure did.
Yeah.
I was one of the people. Clown this bastard. And, get him out of the game.
And that is... That is the thing that could be beneficial to come from Stephen A. Smith deciding that he would be the one to really clap back, is that now that will the super friends will now assemble and everybody will just be like, nah, fuck that dude because of X, Y, you know, and Z. No one wanted to be the first to do it. No one wanted to deal with him and the fallout that comes from going at Whitlock. But now that Stephen A. has, other people will be like, no, what he said was right, and here's what I have to add to that. Because what it's going to take to really get this cat out of the paint, and you can take this as a fat joke as well, it's going to take multiple people going after that dude.
Yep.
You know what I mean? It's going to take – it can't just be one person. It's going to take a lot of people just to say, nope. This is why I think he's disgusting, to add on to what Stephen A. did. So I don't know if this is the beginning of the end, but I do think this is the beginning of how people are going to deal with Jason Whitlock and the nonsense he brings to the party.
Well, I tell you what, I loved when my boy said I had a contract which stipulated that I would never have to work with Jason Whitlock. You know how bad you got to hate somebody to name them in your contract?
Damn. I'm gonna do that. I'm gonna do that. My next contract.
And it's gonna be long. It's gonna be a long list.
Hey man, and it's gonna be some people on there that won't even get anywhere near a microphone. I'm still gonna put them on the list.
You just gotta make sure. You never know what could happen.
I'm still gonna put them on the list just to flex on them. Like this
just
person,
in case.
This person doesn't work in broadcasting. I'm fully aware of that. Could you please put their name on the list? Okay.
This person is a pastor. It's fine. You don't know what he can do. You don't know what he might decide to do. Put this motherfucker name on it.
is this a girlfriend from ninth grade? Yes, it is. And I don't want to work with her, okay? Respect my decision.
I know we got to run, but we cannot leave without talking about the state of our Golden State Warriors.
Your Golden State Warriors. I'm just an observer. You're a fan.
So I have so many thoughts.
Oh, boy.
I don't think of myself as a typical Warrior fan. And maybe it's because of the industry we've worked in all these years. But I don't think of myself as a typical fan. I actually think of myself as a little bit more reasoned and rational than most of these knuckleheads out here. While everybody else is freaking out, I'm going, this shit happens, man.
Yeah, man.
I've never seen a dynasty end where everybody's happy.
Speak like, on it.
This is just what happens. So I'm really philosophical about it. Motherfuckers are just not that good anymore.
Nope.
And the fact of the matter is, to have a good team, you have to have things go well. To have that championship team, you have to have things go really well. To win back-to-back or a couple, you have to have it go really well. To dominate for a decade, every single thing has to land perfectly.
Yep.
And they caught lightning in a bottle. They've got one of the greatest players of all time in Steph Curry. They got another one of the greatest shooters of all time in Klay Thompson. Got one of the greatest defensive players of all time in Draymond Green. They had a coach in Steve Kerr who saw what they were, and he implemented a system tailor-made specifically for Steph Curry, and that team dominated for a decade. That's all you can ask. All the other hand-wringing and stuff, all that other bullshit. Steve Kerr's a terrible coach. Trade everybody. And do what? This is just what happens. Like, if you get rid of Klay or Draymond, you're saying to Steph Curry that we're done. And if you think Steph Curry is going to want to sit around for a rebuild, you're out of your goddamn head.
Brother, Everything you're saying, I completely agree with. I have nothing to add to that other than it. Once you take emotion out of the deal, and that's the problem with a lot of Warrior fans, especially a lot of new Warrior fans, is that they are dealing from pure emotion and almost a deity.
It's a weird entitlement.
It's a very weird entitlement, and they have this deity-like view of Steph Curry that it causes them to not really understand what's going on, and that shows that they don't understand the sport. And I'm just talking the actual game of basketball, not even the NBA, if you will, sport. The Warriors are older. Mm-hmm. They were never a truly an athletic team to begin with. Now but they had quickness. But now that with age, that lack of athleticism, that lack of quickness is obvious. They are not very big, and they always haven't been a big team, but they could kill you with intelligence and quickness that they don't have. And while the older players might have the intelligence, because they don't have the quickness and athleticism to go along with that intelligence is almost wasted. And the young kids, who are not particularly athletic themselves, with the exception of Kuminga, don't have the intelligence and the understanding and the skill to play the type of ball needed to play with the veterans and to play Golden State Warrior basketball as we know it, that has been successful the last 10 years. So combine all of that, father time, lack of athleticism, lack of size, youth, with the fact that the league has gotten better and they've gotten more in – They are a product of what the Warriors had been doing over the last 10 years. You get what you get right now. Again, if you take emotion out of it and you watch the game and you know the game, you can clearly see what the fuck is going on. And you know who else can see it? Steph Curry can see it. And last night, it all came to a head.
He shocked. It was crazy him just shaking his head.
Just shaking his head, dog. He had 2 points in the second half.
Yeah, shaking his head. And I feel bad for Steph. I shouldn't feel bad for Steph Curry. I feel bad for the fact that everybody's acting like there's more he could do. And there's more that Steve Kerr could do.
Dog, you're about to be 36 years old.
No, there's nothing more they can do. The problem. Oh, and by the way, I got to mention this because this is the one thing that always ends these dynasties, and that's every player not having the same agenda.
Yep.
All these guys, Kuminga, by the way, I don't care what anybody says, I have not seen this superstar that everybody keeps trying to make Jonathan Kuminga out to be. I haven't seen it. I see flashes of him dunking the ball. He can jump high, but the motherfucker, he's not a great player.
Brother,
he's not.
I'm in complete agreement, and I think the fact that because he is the only athletic guy on the team, that's what excites Warrior fans because, like, holy shit, look what he could do. Just let him get out there and be an athlete. Like, yo, man, it's a lot more than just go out there and be an athlete.
Amen. Like, he has no game at all. He doesn't rebound. How are you going to play 35 minutes and have like four rebounds, and you 6'8", and you play in the post? Get the fuck out of here. You don't play defense. I literally watched this dude. If he doesn't have the ball, he's standing around, and he's watching dudes take the ball out of the basket and watch an outlet pass up the court, and this guy is scoring every fucking time. But it's not just him. The rookies, they don't know what's going on. Guys like Kuminga have been around. He thinks he's a superstar. He is not. He doesn't play like a superstar. It was laughable to hear him say, "Can't nobody guard me one-on-one, basically." Like, people guard you one-on-one every night, every night.
Hey, sometimes they don't guard you because they want you to shoot. They want you to take them wild-ass shots.
Exactly. You suffer from the same shit Jordan Poole suffered from in thinking that you are better than you are.
But he can actually shoot. He can actually score.
Yeah. You have to listen. You got to have some amount of irrational confidence to be a great pro, obviously, but not delusional. Like, you don't be delusional. Do that. And I'm like, I keep asking these guys, Steve Kerr doesn't play the young guy. What young guy can play for this team that's going to help. You think Kuminga is a game changer? Get the fuck out of here.
Oh, no, I'm sorry to slow your roll. But go Kuminga ahead. Said, nah, I'm that dude. Can't nobody yep. guard me. And the next yep. game, motherfucker went like 2-for-13 or some shit.
Yep.
Like
that. Yep.
With 4 turnovers in the first quarter. I mean, I should be fair and I should look it up to and be accurate.
No, it was around that.
But it was
around that.
he talked cash shit about how good he is, and they just yep. ain't let me shine. And then when
and guess what?
They let him shine.
He didn't do nothing. And look at his
very
numbers.
Next game.
He's been playing 30 plus minutes a night since then. Ain't done jack.
Oh my god.
Ain't done jack.
I forgot about that.
If you're that great, take over. Steve Kerr, I think Steve Kerr did that on purpose. Said, okay. You think you're good?
Hey,
okay.
Hey,
I'm gonna give you the whole game.
You know, I mean, I would like to think that it wasn't as petty as, oh, so you think you that motherfucker? All right. Then we're gonna give you that chance. I think a lot of it was rooted in, hey man. We really don't have anything else we can do. So, all right, fine. You know, if he says this, then we'll let him go out there and prove it, because where else are we going to turn? I mean, everything else we tried to do, along with all the injuries and the Draymond suspension, we're kind of running out of, you know, we're kind of running out of rotations or whatever you want to call it. So, all right, hey, let's give the kid a chance. Maybe this is going to be it. Oh, nope.
And by the way, without Draymond Green, and now Chris Paul, they are soft as Charmin. Boy.
Yeah, man. Yeah, man.
They are soft as, I mean, oh my God. Yeah. Watch these kids get pushed through. Like, what? I was telling my buddy the other day, I'm like, dude, you're looking at life without your boy Draymond Green, and it ain't pretty.
They're soft, Marcus, they're soft physically, and they're soft mentally, too.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, they get defeated so quickly. So, like, what's going on?
The last couple of games, man, would have given up 40 plus points in the first quarter. Like, teams are just coming into Oracle.
Yeah.
All right. Opening up the refrigerator and saying,
I like these vittles.
I'm going to eat all your food. And the Warriors are like, you mean you're going to eat all our food?
And it's bye-bye, punk.
The Raptors and the Pelicans like, motherfucker, did I stutter? I said I'm going to eat all of your food. And the Warriors like, well, that's our food.
Wow.
And then they do nothing about it.
And listen, the Pelicans are a really good team.
Yes.
So that's an ass whooping that's waiting to happen. But sorry, not Toronto. You can't be losing Toronto by 30 at the house.
Dog,
sorry.
Dog.
Sorry.
They struggled against the Pistons at home.
Dude, I mean, come on, man.
Yeah,
come
man.
Come on.
Yeah. And
come
this,
on, man.
This is you know, in the Draymond conversation, I kind of tire of it just because it's obvious in terms of you know, the shit he does. But it's also obvious what he brings. But it's obvious that the shit as it stands right now with the Warriors, and this includes Draymond, it's just it's not sustainable.
Let's not forget, the X factor here is Joe Lacob. And you want to talk about a dude who don't like to lose. It's that guy.
He's been strangely quiet, and I don't think that's good for anybody in that organization, with the exception of Steph.
That is not good. That is not good. Nope. So I think that we're about to see some wholesale changes. Well, tell you what, we'll see what kind of deals happen at the trade deadline, and that'll tell you exactly where the team is headed.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's going to happen before the trade deadline. I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, over the course of this conversation we've been having out for the past 50 minutes, what have you, if the Warriors haven't made a trade.
Facts,
they cannot wait, and I don't think they're going to wait until the trade deadline, and that is, what, the beginning of next month, February 9th. I don't know why that sticks in my head.
Yeah. No, it's time. It's time to start tearing it down. And if Klay is not going to be here next year, let him go. I think you could hang on to Draymond. I think you can hang on to Steph. I think you can hang on to TJD and the young point guard, Pazinski.
Yeah.
But after that, everybody else can go.
I think you can hang on to Chris Paul. I think if he has
yes,
if he,
yes, yes,
if
yes,
he has to
yes,
be put
yes.
in, that's fine. I think you can hang on to Chris Paul.
Yes, I agree. I forgot about Chris Paul. Yes, you could actually hang on to him too. But everybody else is fucking fair game. But you need to start finding yourself a new core, and you need to start finding a new superstar.
Fuck, we have
you ain't winning the championship if you don't have a top 10 dude, period.
We haven't even talked about Wiggins.
He can go.
Ooh, he can go.
Oof. Brutal. He's soft. Oof. He is soft. I'm not saying he's shitty. I'm saying he's soft. Oof. Soft, soft, soft. Oh, who said that? Was that a quote from somebody?
It sounds familiar.
Soft, soft, soft. S-O-F. Soft, soft, soft.
It's another edition of your favorite podcast, Quality Hang. Not just the name. As you can tell, when we get together, indeed, it is a Quality Hang. Make sure you follow on all the socials. And, man, I mean, these first couple of weeks of January have been something. I can only imagine what's going to happen between now and the next time we record an episode.
Dude, I don't know if we can keep this pace up.
Right?
I don't know if we can keep this up. We got to slow some shit down.
Oh, shit.
God damn.
Safe travels, my brother, and let's do it again next week.
Thank you, man. Let's do it. Love you. I'll see you next week.
All right, everybody. Be good.